Welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from a family perspective. We are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro. Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
You nailed it, hey. Baby. First time's the charm this time. How you doing?
Good.
Today's show, we have a very special guest. His name is Adam Mitchell. And I would love to read off the bio, but I mean, it's something to me, it's a little bit more personal than that. We met Adam, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago up in Mayapak. He was teaching our kids jujitsu. Little did I know that he had an amazing, not one skill set, but a bunch of different skill sets. He's the dad of four amazing kids. He's also the founder of Close Quarter Dad that he founded back in 2017, which is what we're really going to focus on this show. In addition to being a dad, he spent the last 25 years focusing his career on keeping people safe by teaching families and professionals the topics of personal protection, survival, and martial arts. Welcome to the show, Adam Mitchell.
Thank you so much, guys. It's a pleasure to be with you once again. And yeah. I always love my conversations with you. You're two of my favorite people, like I just said. So this is going to be great.
We're excited because you, like Gino said earlier, you have made such an impact with our family from, you know, the time Gabriella was, 6 years old? And now she's going to be 23, just to put that out there. And you know, so that's what we're really going to be talking about.
I want to jump into Close Quarter Dad. Mm-hmm. You founded it back in 2017. What made you found it? And what is the mission or the purpose statement of Close Quarter Dad?
Sure. That's a great question. So, you know, thanks for asking it. The mission is to help men be the guide and guardian for their children and to be able to apply a principle that we call full circle safety training to their kids. And that includes three areas of keeping your children safe, which is teaching them how to keep their bodies safe through personal protection, how to keep themselves found. So whether it be wilderness or in the city or disconnected from you in a large crowd, say maybe you're at an NFL game and it's letting out and your four-year-old child gets disconnected from your hand in the crowd, what should they do? All the ways up to the worst case scenario that we as parents fear the most, which is an abduction and are not knowing where our child is or who they're with or where they are, where they're going toward. And then finally, the last one is teaching our children their specific and unique role within the family unit when things go bad or things become dangerous, and also how to mitigate and manage different risks and hazards within the household. So that's basically what it is.
This is amazing because I have to tell you that as you're talking, I feel a little bit nervous thinking of these things because, you know, as a mom, especially of five girls, our worst fear is what you just said, everything you just said. And so I'm excited to kind of get into that because, like I said, you don't think about these things until someone like you points them out and there's something that we can do about it. So I'm excited to hear about all the things that we can now do as, especially as moms, because we feel helpless sometimes.
Yeah, Julia, you know, I'd like to, you know, you say we don't think of these things, but I can tell you and kind of to step into the second half of Gino's question, what got me started with this was in 2006, you know, I mean, right around the time that your daughter was at the dojo training, you know, I really noticed that there were a specific group of people that didn't come in the dojo, didn't come into the school and engage with me personally. And at that time, as you remember, we had hundreds of kids. We had like 160 kids at one time coming in and out of our school. And I had a whole staff of instructors and we were, you know, we were doing really, really well. And it wasn't until I got to those numbers with my students that I was able to witness something very unique. And that was a lot of men were staying in their cars out in the parking lot. And after a couple of months, this really started to kind of bother me. I don't know if it was my ego or if it was actually a genuine concern of what's going on here. Do these guys just coming home from work and they just want to rest and sit in their car? And and what I began to do then is I had my then manager, Peter, who I know you both know very well. I had him recording every father that came into the dojo and who they were. And after about 9 months, we began to look at what were the similar factors among those men who came in and talk to me and engage with me and watch their kids in class and even participated sometimes when I'd pull parents out onto the mat. And there was something very interesting that I discovered, which was these men either, they had former military or law enforcement. They had former first rescue. They were school teachers. They were, or they had previous martial arts in their background. So current or former military, first response, school teachers, or martial artists. So that remove the last one. They were familiar with the environment. They had been indoctrinated when they were young. What do those three have in common? Well, they worked in teams. They were at some point in their career exposed to children in distress or helped move children through traumatic experiences. So they were comfortable working in a team with their own children. And I realized that the men who were sitting in the car, at least at that time, they were uncomfortable coming in and facing someone who maybe, I didn't know at the time, but maybe were uncomfortable with outsourcing something that they felt they should be teaching their children themselves to another man. And I needed to do something about that because as a fellow dad, I couldn't sit there and have that sort of discomfort and fear looming outside of my school in my parking lot. So that was really where it began. I wanted to create a program to teach dads to take on that role, to make sure their children have what it takes when it counts in life's hardest and most hazardous or risky situations.
And where did you learn the skill sets to teach the kids all this? Because I know you've been doing martial arts for a long time, but the other stuff, as far as having a unique role in the family unit, and as far as, you know, when kids are lost, where did you learn all these different skill sets?
Yeah, that's a good question. So anybody can teach fighting. That's easy. That's very easy. Teaching martial arts is a different thing. It's an art. So you have to be able to communicate at a lot of different levels to a lot of different people to be able to root out what their needs are for martial arts. Some parents bring their children to martial arts to better their discipline or their focus, give them a greater sense of confidence, maybe physical fitness. Everybody comes with a different set of reasons. And as an instructor, I'm working with different ages, different, all having different circumstances and coming into the dojo with different life experiences throughout their day. And I'm going from children to teens to adults, and I'm teaching content in a different language, you know? So I really ran the spectrum of learning how to communicate and what was successful. I also had some incredible mentors when it came to actually teaching and how to communicate. And a lot of the, you know, I feel a lot of alignment with some of the coaching work, Gino, that you've done. A lot of that was, you know, actually trying to figure out what learning style this individual student was so that I could speak to their needs. And after doing that for a decade, I got pretty proficient in it, but I also looked outside the martial arts. I had been an outdoorsman my whole life. I have, you know, gone to survival schools and, you know, exposed myself to a lot of things. Like, you know, I rode my bicycle across North America by myself, and I've gone up into the North Atlantic, and I lived on a boat, and I've really, you know, I've pushed myself, you know, outside of the conventional martial arts world to learn a lot of other things. And I did defensive tactics training and dignitary and executive protection training and certification throughout the 90s. And I was really involved in working with law enforcement and helping them in certain areas. So I had exposure, pretty holistic exposure to safety throughout my early career.
And you did a summit, I think a month or two ago, I was up in New York. I was part of the summit, and it was unique in that you're actually interviewing me about how dads can protect their kids once they're gone. And we talked about life insurance, and we talked about setting up the estate. Can you go over an overall view of what you talked about in close quarter that on that summit and some of the big takeaways that you witnessed?
Sure. Before I do that, I want to contextualize a couple things and how we have to view safety. And unfortunately, one of the big things in my mission with Close Quarter Dad is to help parents, especially dads, because I'm a dad and I feel as though I can speak to that community with the most amount of effect. And the thing that we need to set in our minds is that safety, being a child in a potentially dangerous situation, we our minds always go to what is what we most fear, not what is most likely. What is the most dangerous situation? And we want to protect them from that. Not what is the most likely outcome. What is the most dangerous? So the first thing is, from a big macro, is we have to step away from that. The second is we have to look at the types of conflicts statistically that our children are going to face. What are the hazards? What are the conflicts? What are the interpersonal relationships? What are the tensions that they're going to face, whether it's social exclusion, bullying, what types of hands-on situations could they be exposed to in school? How dangerous is their school? How dangerous is your community? And all these learnings that we kind of have to take responsibility and ownership of. But if we look at in general, if we apply what the life cycle of any of these conflicts are, they follow a bell curve. And if there's one message that any of your listeners who are parents can take away from this entire conversation that we have today, it's this, is that do not focus when having a thought or a discussion with your children about safety on what we call the point of no return. That is the very, very top of that bell curve. It is a very small point and is only maybe 1 to 5%. 5% would be a pretty big, huge, and traumatic point of no return. This is where things go hands-on, where the crime is committed, where the strike has already been made. But everything leading up to that, we call pre-conflict. It begins with a root cause. And the root cause can go back years. Mm-hmm. But it begins with a root cause, and then there's escalation. And it escalates to the point of no return. And how a child manages their stress, their situational awareness, their levels of anxiety, how they communicate, who their articulation, all these different things are really going to affect the point where in the point of no return, where that goes. So does it go to a place where it becomes physical, or it becomes what will be traumatic? And then we have to consider the post-conflict, which is de-escalation, which could be anything from escape or avoidance or running away or self-triage or contacting first response, speaking to the teachers, articulating to first response, even out as far as litigation. And then it comes with closure. Okay. So we want to wrap this up with root cause and closure. And parents need to take a complete full circle view of every conflict that their child is going to face throughout their life. And if they do this, they don't, and they get out of the fear of, oh, what's the worst case scenario that they're going to, and what's the most dangerous, and you know, never talk to strangers, all this nonsense. But if they focus on a holistic perspective of where the root cause might be and how they're going to bring closure to the situation their child faces, and they're able to help them to manage pre-conflict and post-conflict, but prepare them through exposure and engagement and trust for the point of no return situation, then I think that we've got a really good opportunity for keeping our children very, very safe into their adult life.
Yeah, you just said so much. And every time you were saying, you know, as a mom, we do think the absolute worst. And then we think backwards. We're like, okay, don't talk to anyone. Don't make eye contact. Don't park near a van. I mean, I you know, my kids know me. They're like, don't worry, mom.
Park near the white
I won't
van.
Talk to anybody. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But at the same time, like you said, it's the awareness. Between the both of us, we have a lot of children. And some of the kids are more aware than others. And so my worry is, you know, a couple of the kids I have that are not aware at all, like they won't notice anything that's going on around them. The other person can tell me everything everyone was wearing, you know, who looked suspicious. I mean, the whole thing. And so my question to you really is, when you teach this, do you teach it to the parent, to the dad, or do you teach it to the full family with the kids involved?
I teach it specifically to the dads, but okay. I have worked many times with the complete family. But speaking to the dads and their specific role is where my focus really is, because like I said, that's where I think I can have the best effect.
And two, I think it's important as a wife to encourage my husband to do this with you, because, you know, he's the role model in the house. He's a father figure in the home, and you know, he's the protector, as Laura tells him all the time, you know, dad's the protector, and it's very adorable, but it's true. And, you know, I could give the same message, but if it comes from the dad, it's different. And so I just encourage all the ladies listening, you know, encourage your husband, encourage the father of your children to take this seriously.
Yeah, I'm really glad you said that. And I want to get back to Gino's question about the summit. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that I was able to unpack and discover on my own and being involved in this for decades and coming away with these new learnings, speaking with so many magnificent people. But one of the things that you just said there, Julia, I'd really like to sort of unpack that even a little bit. And to some of the men who are listening, I want you to understand that there are a couple categories that we, and sort of, I might even say, check yourself if there's any imposter syndrome going on here, because a lot of the men that I train, the first thing that they need to do is they need to leave their ego at the door when they step into train, because so many men show up in carrying this sense of security and kind of like, they've been here, they've done that, and they need to show up an empty vessel. Mm-hmm. We have what's called the gunslinger. That's the man who thinks that they've got a big closet of firearms and they've got mm-hmm. pallets of ammunition. And they think that's going to solve the problems. That does nothing for your child's safety in their life. Although you think it might, it really doesn't. And then there's also the savior. That's the man who thinks that he's going to come in like a superhero, right, no matter what the situation, he's going to be able to fix and solve every problem. Right. Then we also have the Joker. That's the guy who shows up in training saying, oh, my wife, oh my gosh, we're screwed. Or my kids, they can't even get out of there. And he's always making kind of this mockery.
Yes.
But what he's doing is he's sort of backfilling his own insecurity. Yeah. So what I ask everybody as we step further into this conversation, just come into this as a new student. Come into this with a completely clear lens without thinking, oh, well, this is what I have and this is what I've done and this is my experience. But start fresh in this conversation and you're going to get the most out of it.
Mm, I love that. Can you tell us real quick about the program that you have and what you have to offer? Just take us through what it means exactly, because I want to have an idea when my husband signs up. I'm going to sign him up. It's a gift.
Yeah, sure. So we follow a 3-month program, okay, and we have signups every month, at the beginning of every month. So mm-hmm. men will get on a waiting list and then we roll out at the beginning of every month. Mm-hmm. And we run through a monthly training of which there's weekly assignments that for you to engage with your children, regardless of their age or gender, where they are in life. But the first month is all about the high levels of personal protection and how to work with your children and have those experiences. When you step into that role with your children, it's going to harden the mortar of trust that they have with you. They're going to want to engage with you because you're taking them through challenging scenarios, coaching them through that, not drill sergeanting them through that. Mm-hmm. And I talk a lot about that and how you need to develop trust with your children and go on adventures and have discoveries. And through that, and using such words as that, you will be able to show them that they can get through hard things and do hard things. And it's going to be that which creates the bridge to, okay, when someone does this to you or someone steps towards you in a confrontational manner, how do we diffuse this situation? I want to show you how to do this. And then you and I are going to role play this a little bit. Is mm-hmm. that okay? And then, so the first month is all about personal protection. The second month, we talk about the realities of a child getting lost. And we go through sort of the high level protocols of search and rescue. We talk about creating a child identification kit for each one of your kids, because we have to recognize that when it comes to your child being separated from you, your two enemies are time and distance. Mm-hmm. And if we can shorten those gaps of time and distance, then we're going to increase the window of opportunity of recovery and the speed to be able to get information to first response, search and rescue, regardless of where the situation happens, is what is absolutely most important. And then in the second month, what we begin to do is begin a conversation between our children and dad with them not there. And this is really where it gets cool, because when you teach your child, then your child starts to do things and will make decisions that you know that they're making. So think about it. If you spend a month working with your child and you spend 4 days out in the woods teaching them what to do if they get lost, mm-hmm. and this is what I'm going to do if you get lost. Now we're able to have a conversation over miles of distance of woods. I know what my kid's going to be doing. I know how they're going to be responding. My kid knows what I'm going to be doing. They know that within 5 minutes, I'm going to be doing this. They know that when, there's going to all these different steps. So we're able to communicate, and that right there creates this this level of trust that I'm not so sure many dads have with their children. So that second month really focuses on that conversation, and it's done in the laboratory of loss prevention and all the ways up to abduction, what to do. Mm-hmm. And then the third month is high level family. And, you know, we talk about fire safety. We talk about escape planning. We talk about all the different, we talk about moving through a parking lot in the mall. And if dad is confronted by someone, how the mother will shield the children and move the children, and the father will get in the middle, and how to, like, all these different things when traveling or maneuvering or living in the home as a family unit. And then once that's completed, once that core competency course is done, then we have an ongoing program where we have each one of the teams is their own cohort, and they work and they support one another month after month.
That's amazing. And I have to tell you, as you're talking about that, I think we avoid this topic with our families because we're not sure what the answers are. We're not sure if something happens to one of our kids, they're lost in the mall. Like you said, we don't have a plan because we don't know what the right thing to do is. So we avoid it. Yeah. And so I really appreciate that you're doing this because it will give us guidance, you know, and I think that's what we really need. We need to know what to say to the kids, what plan works, you know, and actually start, because when you have a plan, at least the kids know that, okay, here, and you know, and the problem too, I think, is nowadays is everyone has a cell phone and they feel safe with it. And they're like, all right, if something happens, I can call my mom or whoever. But we realize, my gosh, what if it's taken? Or what if we actually don't have it in that moment? Then we're completely lost. Because first of all, we don't know anyone's phone number. We don't know anything. We don't know even where we live. Some people need GPS to get home. And so we rely on this little device to keep us safe. And wow, you know, what if we don't have it? And so I think,
oh boy, we could step into that conversation.
Yeah, I'm sure. No, I know that. I know. And I think if you want to, you can. But you know, there's this people are fearless at this point, but it's a false sense of safe security. You know, we have a safe in our house. And I think, I don't even know how to get in it. You know, if something happens, I would have to be like, go check the number to get in.
Wondering if so, that's intentional.
It could be. I am a better shot, just so you know.
She's a better shot, but who's quicker? And I get off more shots.
You're gonna call Michael.
Exactly.
So. You know, Julia, you said something really important, and I'm only echoing Gino and Jake. And I think it was in the second lesson, Wheelbarrow Prophets, and I know it's in the gateway. Mm-hmm. You know, if you fail to plan to fail. I've heard Gino say that so many times, and nowhere is it as true in preparedness for safety. Now, we're not talking about preparedness for, you know, your bug out bag and what to do if the apocalypse happens or if there's an economic meltdown or if a nuclear thing, you know, none of that. This is day-to-day safety.
Yeah. So. And it's basic. Like I said, if your kid gets lost, what do you do? They don't know what to do. You don't know what to do. And so you're doing different things. And this will just help.
That's correct.
To have a plan. And I was going to repeat what my husband said about the plan, but I couldn't remember what it was.
It's proper.
I just literally wrote the word plan. I was hoping one of you would say it.
Poor performance.
Yeah. I listen to him all the time.
Yeah, she listens to this. She hear me though. I listen to you all the time and I hear you, baby. You hear me. Big difference. You know what I'm saying? Adam, what did you find out about at the summit? I mean, what were some of the things that really stuck out to you?
Yeah. So, you know, that was a big leap for me, Gino. I noticed that the internet had never had a summit on child safety. It hasn't happened. Yeah. So, I took the bull by the horns and I created the Child Safety Summit.
Well, one thing that pops out to me is maybe one of the reasons why it hasn't is that people haven't figured out how to monetize it. I mean, maybe you're on that journey as well, but sometimes it's difficult to find, almost like Gino's family. How do you monetize it? I see it as crystal as day, but at the time I didn't. So there's people out there saying, I want to bring all these different skills, but how do I turn it into a business, or how do I make it profitable, or how do I get the message out there? And I think you're on the cusp of doing that with these quarterly, you know, these 3-month programs and then ongoing and getting these summits together. So, You had a bunch of speakers on that whole weekend, correct?
Yeah, we had 14 speakers, and I had a line of people who came in kind of after I had scheduled everything. Some real world class people who have already committed for next year. The goal was to get a wide spectrum. And on day one, it would be about, it would be the professionals and personal protection. Day two, it would be loss prevention. Day three would be family safety. And when I wanted to make sure that this was a goodwill thing and not a, you know, a profit center for me in any way, I don't think that anywhere on the promotional materials you'll see close quarter dad. I may be wrong, but I really made sure that nowhere did I tether my name to the work that each one of the guests were doing. And I allowed them to share the work that they do and any product that they wanted or whatever on this platform. So this was really very much a collaborative effort among people, their unique work in helping families and children stay safe, and trying to get a symposium of them together. And it was completely free. Anybody could attend the virtual summit. So when people signed up, I targeted men, obviously. I had a total of 818 as of the beginning of Sunday, beginning of the last day. We had 1,818 people had signed up. And 22 of those were moms, by the way. I also had them go through a survey. I wanted to understand what their concerns were, what brought them here, what kept them awake at night, and what they wanted to get out of this time that they were going to be spending with the people that I brought together. And the numbers were pretty amazing. They very much favored online exploitation was the number one fear, and exposure of their children and exposure of their privacy. That was 39% of the people who filled out that form said that that was their greatest concern. And I want to remind you, and God bless the families of this incident, but this was 1 week after the Uvalde school shooting. So it was about two weeks after. I really felt uncomfortable. I mean, this was all booked. We were scheduled. Everything was done. Promotions were done. Everything was done. And then that happened. And I just did not want this event to be seen as trying to capitalize on this catastrophe. But I also felt that now was the time. Now it had to be done. And interestingly, you know, 39%, they shared that child, you know, online exploitation was their main concern. 18%, I'm just reading the stats here, 18% were peer-to-peer violence, bullying, and social exclusion. 16% was self-harm, and which would lead to mental health issues and depression. Parents were very concerned about that, 16%. And 10% of them were concerned about targeted school violence. And then 8% substance, alcohol, and drug abuse. And then so on down the line, they get smaller, dating and sexual abuse, domestic and in-home abuse. What this said to me is that I need to shift my focus and concentrate more on the ubiquitousness of digital information and the access that that parents allow their children to have. Or maybe I should reword that: parents mismanage. Because you're not going to stop their access to it. The harder you try, the more they're going to go after it. But your ability to, and the two things that I really took away from the conversations I had were, number one, every single guest speaker, every single one of them, they may or may not have known this, but I sure focused in on it. Their key message was communicate with your children. Right. You have to communicate. Some of them said, you have to be vulnerable. Gino, you yourself said, you have to bring your children into your household budget. Let them know about the numbers. Share with them. Have them participate in that. That is showing vulnerability. Not saying, oh, it's none of your business, you know, blah, blah, any of that. But every one of them, from the top, one of the top trackers, human trackers in the United States, to one of the best wilderness survivalists, to someone who's on the front lines of child exploitation and human trafficking. We were all into the top personal protection trainer in the world. We had them there, and they all centered on that one thing, which was, you need to put down the veil of insecurity. You need to put down all of the different, you know, superhero cloaks you think that you wear, and you need to have open and trusting communication with your children. That's number one. Number two, you need to step into the role of exposing your children to difficult things and being the first one to cross that bridge. Or I call in my program, I call it crossing the stream, where you take a little child and there's little stones across the stream and she's scared and she doesn't like, daddy, I'm going to fall in the stream. I'm going to float down the stream. She's a little stream. And you slowly step across, you turn around, you hold your hand out. She sees that you did it. Mm-hmm. You need to begin crossing the stream every day with your children, exposing them and helping to build their resilience in different scenarios and situations in life. And you need to start giving them small victories in those difficult times. It's going to help with the decision-making and the negotiation gap. It's going to help them to be able to solve problems and think of that what the proper outcome should be faster, rather than letting them sit there and spend 4 days, an hour on Minecraft. Mm-hmm. This is on you. This is on the parents. Those are really the two biggest things. It wasn't about teaching them how to do a strong reverse punch and getting a heavy bag in a gym in your basement. It wasn't about stranger danger. It wasn't about any of that. It was about simple things that I think are common sense that we all know, but do we truly live? Mm-hmm.
So in other words, have the kids embrace the suck. That's why I had my son go work as a busboy in a restaurant, lunchtime, hot as hell outside, running up and down and really struggling and really figuring out how to work with other adults, how to serve others. That was I one of the best things that I think I did for him early on. And number two, just there's pros and cons to sharing your budget, because now the kids see how much money we're making and they're like, well, dad, you're a cheapo. Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that? So just be aware that when you open up the books, you know, early on, it was a lot easier, but now, and it's a great conversation to have, like, you know, why are we, the justification of why are we spending this? Why are we allocating that? Well, why aren't we doing this, dad? So it's a great conversation to have just to talk about money in general.
Yeah. Well, I think that, like you said, Adam, the communication, see, a lot of us avoid it because it's a lot of effort. It's a lot of work to do this. And so unfortunately, sometimes the dads would rather sit in the car and wait for someone else to teach their kids, but they don't want to be taught from somebody else. They want to be taught by their father. They want to be taught everything you're talking about from the man who raised them. Beautiful.
We could talk for hours. I mean, before we wrap this up, where can the listeners get more information? Where can they go to find out about the programs that you offer and more about what you do?
Sure. Before I go there, I want to share just a couple things that I'd like to impact the listeners a little bit. And I'd like to give them something, some meat to chew on here. First of all, we need to look at keeping your children safe, as I already said, in a much wider dimension. I had Gino on the Child Safety Summit to talk about, and I put him in a unique day. I put him in loss prevention. Why would I put Gino on the tail of one of the best wilderness survival experts, one of those human trackers, and people who are talking about abduction and kids getting lost? Well, because what happens when you, mom or dad, get lost, or you pass this life and your children are left alone? We need to think like that. We need to think with many different dimensions of what's keeping our children safe means. The work that, another person I had on, she was talking about porn, and not about keeping our children safe about porn, but it is a reality that your child, by the time they are 12 years old, will not be exposed to adult content, but will be exposed to traumatic content that is dehumanizing and will leave them wondering about their own sexuality, about their own emotions. And if you don't step into that conversation, then what you're doing is you're creating an emotional challenge that child is going to carry on for the rest of their life. They're going to leak out sideways. They're going to be making decisions based on that experience that was never addressed by you. And we need to think more like that. We need to think that safety is a much, much greater deal than the point of no return, than the most dangerous outcome that we fear the most. And we have to look at it with a much, much wider perspective. We also need to understand the internet has changed our world. I don't need to tell anybody this, but we need to understand that, first of all, kids have never had this opportunity like they have now. how they use information in communicating with other kids all over the world, being able to get information, having algorithms, being able to determine what their unique learning style is and content being delivered to that. That is magnificent. What AI is doing for children who are suffering from Asperger's or autism and being able to change the learning style and the processing of this is all fantastic. We can no longer blame the internet or blame social media or TikTok or video games. Mm-hmm. This is on you, 100% on you. There's been a 57% increase in children who've been exploited over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. There's been a 40% increase in child fatalities due to that exploitation. I want to invite every parent to ask their child if they're over 12 years old, if they've ever heard of the website Omegle. If your child says, yes, I have, they have been on Omegle. And if they have been on Omegle, I want to ask you this. How would you, as a father, now dads, I'm speaking to you. I want you to step into this feeling right now. You may need to pull your car over if you're listening. How would you feel if another man in real time in front of your child was doing something horrific to himself in the presence of your child, and she was there in real time? How would that make you feel? Well, if your child has said that she knows this website that has happened to her or him, you need to hear me very clearly on this and go. You can even go to my website. I brought in a New York City police officer. We went on this web. He had no idea what we were doing. I surprised him. He's also a dad. He's a great friend. This needs to be understood. How vulnerable children are to online exploitation, which leads to grooming, which leads to human trafficking. And human trafficking does not mean, it is not a situation in Thailand or in the tunnels of Romania or in, you know, Russian wives. This is an American problem. This is a problem that is in every town, in every municipality needs to have a line item in their budget for it, because it is an epidemic problem that is hidden in plain sight, and it is happening, and it will happen to your child if you do nothing about it. I'm promising you. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to just raise the battle flag here, because we need warriors to step into this, to not just have the conversation, but to engage with their children, to not be ignorant, to not worry about chasing the dollar every day and coming home and work and hoping they got a good golf game on Sunday, but to commit time to spending with your child so that they build trust, you communicate, you expose them and build their resilience and confidence. Because if you do not, your child's risk is much greater than what you were facing in the 70s or 80s in school. The game has completely changed, and dads need to stand up or they need to step aside.
Wow. That's amazing.
Where can the listeners get more information?
Close Quarter Dad, Gino. Closequarterdad.com. Check out my podcast. Check out, go to Close Quarter Dad. I have a lot of free courses and content that they can sign up to there. And if they're interested in joining one of our teams, every month we roll out with only 20 men. They're small groups. Mm-hmm. And everybody's welcome. The only requirement is to be a dad.
That's amazing.
Thank you, Adam.
Yeah, incredible. And I just want to encourage all the moms out listening. I don't know. Can we give gifts to our husband to sign up? Can we do that? I think I'm going to gift you that.
My birthday already passed, so it's a little too late. Maybe Christmas time.
I would ask the moms to show up with information. I would ask the moms 100%. To understand human trafficking right now, because that's the number one thing that parents need to get and understand, and then say, what are you doing about it?
I love that. No, I love that. And it's that responsibility that we always talk about. And a lot of us just avoid this topic because we're so unsure of it. Like we talked about, we don't know what to do, so we don't do anything. Mm-hmm. But here's the answer. Adam's going to take care of it. Learn from him. And I'm super excited to go through this. So thanks, thank you, Adam. Thanks for everything you do, really.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I really appreciate you both.
Thanks.